Yankees Files Podcast. We are back. I'm Will Harris, you're Alec Whipple, and the rest of you are probably disappointed in the way the Yankees failed to take advantage of a week in which they exclusively played some pretty bad teams named after garments. And you know what? I'm disappointed too. The offense has been bad without Aaron Judge. Even in spite of some very good pitching performances, the Yankees lost a number of games. It wasn't a banner week for Michael King, unfortunately. So there's just a lot not to like, frankly. You won't be surprised to know that I think there are plenty of reasons to be optimistic. But Whipple, I think, you know, we're as far into the season as we are, we ought to start talking about, you know, to what extent this team is what it is and to what extent we think things will change. But before we get into that, how are you feeling?
Not great as well. I think thankfully the Yankees avoided playing the teams named after shirts and pants, but they did not fare so well with the Sox this week. The garment teams caused some trouble, but you know, I was thinking back like before we started this and kind of what we were talking about either last week or the week before in terms of what makes each of us anxious. And I think you have more confidence in the offense. I have more confidence in the pitching staff. And I feel like this week kind of, you know, didn't entirely bear out my anxieties and, you know, where I choose to place my blind faith. But it just, to me, like, it's not like the Yankees pitching was perfect. Like you said, Michael King didn't have a great week. Luis Severino had a bit of a rough start, but those guys, especially someone like Severino, he didn't let the outing completely spiral. You had guys like Gerrit Cole and Domingo Herman who, you know, were pitching really well against the Red Sox. Herman specifically definitely impressing a lot more than we've seen. We've seen Clark Schmidt improve. We've seen guys in the bullpen come, you know, Clay Holmes looking like his 2022 midsummer self. Just so the guy, I guess what I'm saying is the guys who are pitching well, you know, exceeding expectations, the guys who aren't pitching well are limiting the damage. Like Luis Severino hasn't given up 10 runs in a start. Yeah, the Dodgers start wasn't great. The White Sox start could have been a lot worse. And you know what? He switched his game plan, throwing more off speed, going away from the fastball. I just feel more confident in the approach there. And my point is, I still trust this pitching staff. I'm really happy with what they've done, even in a week where they didn't win so many games. I think right now the conversation has to be about the offense because anyone who's anxious about this offense, those fears have been borne out. I mean, without Aaron Judge, there's a lot of issues. Guys, and I think the issues come more from guys who are expected to be playing well and aren't playing well. It's not necessarily the guys who weren't counted on for much and haven't met those expectations. I mean, there are some real concerns. Some may be more valid than others, but a lot to talk about with some of the veterans in this order, especially not that Aaron Judge is going to be out for that much longer. You know, you have a few weeks left. It could be a lot worse, but it would have been nice to see the best hitters on this week's Yankees team be Giancarlo Stanton, Anthony Rizzo, DJ LeMahieu. And while it's great to see Willie Calhoun and Jake Bowers step up, I mean, that's probably the highlight of the offense outside of Aaron Judge this season, to see those guys who are spring training NRI step up. It's just really disappointing that that is where the offensive firepower is coming from. Largely
hey,
them and Gleyber
you
Torres.
The way you talk about Billy McKinney and his 168 WRC plus.
Billy McKinney, what a career that guy's had. But it's we can celebrate those things and we can also look at where the serious problems are coming from. And also recognize that those might be fixed. They're not long-term. There are guys coming back that can help. But there are real reasons, I think, to be concerned with this offense. And hopefully we can have a conversation that isn't just they should have upgraded in the winter, because I think that's just a lazy form of analysis. I'd rather focus on the team we have instead of going back 6 months and looking at trade possibilities, which people probably would have been upset at in the moment. And would you rather have Dalton Varsho on this team? Would you rather have Carlos Correa? Would you rather have a lot of guys who aren't even upgrades for this current Yankees team? So I think that's kind of where I stand, like a qualified disappointment in the offense. And I think a lot of people's criticisms, I know you have some of your own, the way people are discussing certain peripheral figures in the Yankees organization, their relation to the hitters. I just think there's a lot of lazy criticism going around right now, but at the same time, a lot of valid criticism because it was a terrible week for the offense.
Okay, so let's start with one thing that almost everyone on Twitter is wrong about. Whipple, who's Dylan Lawson?
Is it my brother's high school friend? No, wait, that's Dylan Melnick. I'm sorry. That one was just for us, everyone, and I apologize. Yankees hitting coach Dylan Lawson.
Dylan Lawson is the Yankees hitting coach, and people got mad yesterday when they found a quote from him from a week ago in a Ken Rosenthal article in The Athletic in which he said about Anthony Volpe, if he were hitting a reckless 200, there's no chance you'd have confidence, but it's a professional 200. And I think, you know, you generally know what it is that Lawson is getting at. Obviously, his whole thing is hit strikes hard, right? Like, that's been the Dylan Lawson mantra for this, you know, this era of Yankees coaching. And I don't think there's any question that he would then, you know, talk about the players in relation to that approach. And is Anthony Volpe doing a great job of hitting the ball, period? No. But he has a lower chase rate than Giancarlo Stanton, who is an extremely disciplined hitter. You know, lower than Josh Donaldson. You know, he's right there with Gleyber Torres, who's very disciplined. You know, StatCast has him StatCast has him kind of, you know, middle of the pack for chase rate. So that's one thing that's good. And he's 62nd percentile in barrel rate and 58th percentile in hard hit rate. So for a guy who doesn't, like, scream power, he's been relatively disciplined. He has hit the ball probably harder than we would expect him to on average, and he's barreled the ball up more than we'd expect him to. So for Dylan Lawson to say, look, my whole approach is on swinging at strikes and hitting them hard, here's a guy who's doing that better than we thought he would, like, that's not weird. And all the people who got mad at that quote and then proceeded to get mad at Dylan Lawson generally for the Yankees struggling without Judge in the lineup, or the fact that broadcasters keep saying Anthony Volpe's front hip is flying open and everyone in the world can see it, and why isn't Dylan Lawson doing something about that? Like, what a ridiculous thing, period. It's so absurd. You know, all these tweets, even Smoltz is talking about Volpe's hip flying open. All the announcers who watch Volpe see that. Why is Dylan Lawson not working on fixing it? Literally everyone in the world. Volpe opens his front hip too early. Dylan Lawson, don't worry, kid. Just keep swinging for the fences. Who cares what the numbers say? Ha ha. Like, this is absurd. And I go back to the same thing that I come back to often, which is the idea that some of the best baseball players in the world struggle at times because they're being insufficiently coached is absurd. People were saying that Aaron Hicks hitting well in his first week in Baltimore is proof that there's something systemically wrong with the way the Yankees, like, are coached at hitting or something. I don't know. Like, I would contend that Aaron Hicks's resurgence in Baltimore has a lot more to do with regression to the mean and a 391 BABIP than, you know, anything else that he has going on. But, I mean, it's just infuriating, it's stupid, it's brainless, it's lazy, and I am tired of people doing this form of analysis where they just grasp at straws for something to blame instead of just accepting that the season is long. If you believe that the roster should be pretty good in the long run, that's what's going to happen. Like, and so many of the people who do this stuff will say, oh, well, I've been watching baseball for so much longer than you have. I've been a Yankee fan longer than you've been alive. Like, go home, frankly. The idea that you could have all this tenure watching baseball and still have the idiot takes that you have is not a point in your favor. And I'm sorry that I'm building a straw man and then arguing with it here. But my point is that if you believe ever in baseball that the reason a group of guys are underachieving as a whole is because they're being insufficiently coached, I encourage you to find another explanation because you're almost always going to be wrong.
Yeah, it also goes to your point about how coaching, we just don't know impact of coaching. We don't know impact of managers. For as little as we know about the impact of managers, we know even less than that about the impact of peripheral coaches, about hitting and pitching. And you look and it's just, you know, it would make sense to me if the best hitting coaches, if there were hitting coaches that correlated with the best offenses and then, you know, they left and there was a decline. But you look even through the Yankees. I mean, look at Kevin Long, who was the hitting coach for like 7 years, and he gradually, the offense started off really well. He was credited for a lot of swing changes. And I think Kevin Long is a good hitting coach, but that offense by the end was really bad. And that had nothing to do with Kevin Long, but the players that were available to him, and they just simply weren't that good. So it does always come down to the players. And I get that Anthony Volpe is a younger player than most of the guys that Dylan Lawson's worked with, potentially needs more swing assistance. But I would be 99% sure. I'd be 100% sure that he's getting that swing assistance, that they're working on those things. And it comes to the other part of the argument, which I really get annoyed by, is that this stuff isn't like pushing a button. You don't say, oh, push the button to fix your hip. And Volpe's like, oh, I didn't think of that. Let me, you know, we're going to work on that. Now suddenly it's good. This stuff takes days, weeks, months. You don't know what he's working on the cage. You don't know what he's tried and abandoned. Maybe he just doesn't feel comfortable with the change stance. Maybe he's trying and he's just not ready to execute it in a game. Like, we just don't know any of this. I wouldn't be surprised if we see swing changes for Volpe. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see them. And none of that correlates to actual coaching that's going on. And coaching doesn't correlate to actual performance. It's so arbitrary, up in the air. The way I see coaching is that, you know, coaches basically are zero until, like, it's a neutral effect. It's a net zero. And they definitely can add something for sure. I just doubt that they subtract something. I think they're held responsible in certain cases. That's when coaches get fired, is when the owner is unhappy with his performance, his investment. They're easier chopping blocks than trading away or cutting players. But I don't think the coaches are specifically taking that away from hitters or pitchers. And again, I think managers probably do have some effect, but I think, like you said, the best manager is going to help his team, and the worst manager probably isn't going to make a good team play that poorly. So I think at the end of the day, there are problems with the Yankees. Dylan Lawson is nowhere near the problem. If he gets fired, it is just because of frustration with the hitters. It's because of underperformance that he'll be held responsible for. But it's not like he's doing anything to make these guys play worse. And if you want to criticize Yankees player development, that's a much larger conversation than one singular hitting coach at the big league level. And that, yes, I agree, there can be actual effects that team's player development has. But all, you know, by all accounts, Yankees player development has been very good. They've been producing quality pitchers. They have a lot of great hitting prospects right now. And those guys will come and contribute to the majors. That is a much larger operation than one guy who sits on the major league team and tells Aaron Judge how to hit. Like, this guy is not as bad as people think. And even if he was bad, he's not going to have the effect that people think. It's a frustration thing. I get it. But I think your frustration could be targeted elsewhere. The history of this stuff shows that it really doesn't matter as much as people think it does.
Yeah, I mean, the Yankees in the Marcus Thames era had really good offenses. The Yankees in the Dylan Lawson era have, by and large, had really good offenses. Like, it's easy to forget that this team scored the most runs in the AL, maybe the most. I think the Dodgers scored the most runs in baseball. This team scored the most runs in the AL and had the best run differential in the AL last year. That wasn't all because of Aaron Judge. It helps, obviously, but, like, the idea that this offense is somehow hamstrung because of Dylan Lawson, when Dylan Lawson was also there last year when they were good, like, none of it adds up. So we can move past that. If you believe that, you aren't smart. that, like, I don't like treating arguments that way, but that's the only way to treat it. Because as you said, nobody knows what he is working on with individual players, and nobody knows, you know, truly the philosophy that he is asking them to adopt or to, you know, to employ. So to act like you do is arrogant, and to act like you are somehow the person who knows that this is the true talent level of this Yankees offense, like, it's insane.
Also,
it's completely
insane.
What's
he supposed to say? Like, Volpe sucks? He's going to say that to the...
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. This is people's frustration with Boone. This is apparently people's frustration with Dylan Lawson. Like, fans will get disappointed in a guy, and they will want the team's response about that guy to be, you know what? You're right. He sucks. We were wrong. Like, when has that ever happened? It's never happened.
Right.
And it will never happen.
Right. The closest we've ever come to that recently was when Boone said Oswald Peraza's bats were not as good in spring training, and everybody freaked out about that. Like, that's the close, and that was basically a non-statement. And the way that they're handling Volpe, if Volpe gets demoted, it will come on the it will come after lots of praise. It will be a development emotion. It would never be this guy is playing poorly, so we're sending him down. Every way the Yankees have handled him is to put the utmost confidence behind them. I don't think demotion's out of the question, but it would never be phrased as he's hitting so poorly we had no chance to send him, but to send him down. And when you operate knowing that that's the way they're going to act, and then you get surprised when Dylan Lawson says something like that, it just shows you're just looking for people to criticize.
Yeah. So that on its own, pretty bad. Whipple, I have pulled up here the Yankees' offensive performance by player since June 1st. Of the 15 batters who have gotten a plate appearance in that span for the Yankees, who do you think is last by WRC+?
Since when?
Since June 1st, this month.
Anthony Rizzo.
It's Anthony Rizzo. He has one hit. One hit and three walks. He's hitting 033, 121, 033. That is a 154 OPS. So it's a negative 56 WRC+. He's been worth negative 0.6 war in that time. If you want to look for reasons the team has struggled without Aaron Judge, look no further than Anthony Rizzo, negative 56 WRC+, DJ LeMahieu, 25 WRC+, Giancarlo Stanton, 64 WRC+, Gleyber Torres, 65 WRC+, this month. Like, that's the problem. I don't know how else to convey this, how else to explain it. Like, just as was the case at the end of April when Judge was out, but had even been the case earlier in the year, like when they lost the series to the Twins while Judge was still there, you know, after that Angels series where Gleyber hit the walk-off sac fly through Judge's first injury, the problem consistently was that good players weren't hitting well. You know, DJ, Gleyber, and Rizzo went into a collective slump at that time. DJ, Gleyber, Rizzo, and Donaldson, if you exclude his first game back from injury, are in a collective slump right now. So again, people complain about roster construction. People complain about the hitting coach. People complain about Aaron Boone. People complain about, you know, any number of things, the training staff. But it's pretty clear to me that what we're seeing here is the guys who the Yankees need to see play well are not playing well. You know, Jake Bowers at 133 is the only guy with a WRC+ of 130 or better in the month of June with more than 17 plate appearances. Like that can't be the case.
And it's funny because we were talking about him as maybe the most logical roster cut 2 weeks ago when some of these guys came back, and he's really turned it on since then.
Yeah, shout out to Jake Bowers, who has been cool as hell. And, like, going back to the Dylan Lawson criticizers, like, if that's the position you want to take, explain Billy McKinney, explain Jake Bowers, explain Willie Calhoun, explain Greg Allen, who keeps showing up and hitting well for the Yankees and every time they put him out there. Like, this is the kind of incongruence and insanity of those takes. But Whipple, I don't know if you disagree, but to me, the guys who need to carry the offense when Judge is out are Gleyber, Stanton, DJ, and Rizzo. It would be nice to get something from Donaldson, but I think those four guys, we would argue, should be solidly better than Donaldson based on what we expect from them. If you're getting nothing from those guys, as the Yankees have gotten nothing from them effectively this month, with the exception of a couple homers from Gleyber, I think this is kind of what things look like. If you're getting something from them, it's going to look pretty different. Am I wrong about this?
No, I think that's 100% right. I think people are frustrated about Volpe because he seems like the easiest person to switch out. And I said this last week, but there's such an easy reality to see in which Volpe gets sent down, hits really well, Peraza gets called up, doesn't hit well, and then yep. What do you do? So, like, we can play roster musical chairs in that spot, but it doesn't really matter. The Yankees know it doesn't matter as much. I still think they're committed to his development at the major league level because they know that in the ideal world, he's not relied on as the guy. And unfortunately, right now, because of those other guys, his offensive lack of performance is under the spotlight. But you're right. I mean, it comes down to those guys. I think for me, DJ and Rizzo have been most disappointing because Stanton, I think you just kind of expect like it's going to take like a few weeks to get back to where he was before the IL, which like isn't great, but also like I kind of expected that. And I think most people kind of expect that. And Gleyber has struggled, but still has made some positive impacts in some games, definitely, like this week.
Yeah, and I mean, he has a 112 WRC plus on the season and a 113 WRC plus going back to May 20th. Like, Gleyber, this is a mid-110s WRC plus guy with the potential to up that to the 120 range and the risk to fall to the 105 range is what Gleyber Torres is. Like, I don't think anyone disagrees with that, and it's what he's been over the whole season. It's what he's been for the last 3.5 weeks. It's not quite what he's been for the last, you know, week and a half to 2 weeks, but, you know, generally it's where he finds his level. And, you know, he had three very good games before going, what was it, 0-for-3 with a walk last night. So, you know.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, like, we can talk about Gleyber Torres, but I think the main guys I think who have let this offense down in the last few weeks are Rizzo and DJ. And yeah. Rizzo, which is, I mean, it's just the worst slump of his career, as we've heard, but it just looks like, I don't know, like, I hate to say injury, but like something isn't quite right. We know he had the neck thing, and this is just so different to me than a slump. Like, he's just, with an 044 BABIP, like, you're probably like, okay, there's some regression. But he hasn't really hit anything that makes you think he's getting robbed by the BABIP gods. He just looks like the Rizzo that we saw early in the season was, you know, hitting the ball to all fields, taking advantage of the short porch, taking advantage of the lack of the shift, just kind of like being that middle of the order guy, like, and obviously playing a little bit above his level. But I think regression hitting him this hard shows that maybe there's got to be something else there besides the lack of Judge, you know, which is kind of the only change in the last few weeks. I feel like he will be fine. I am a lot more concerned about DJ though, and for me, for him, it's, and obviously everyone can see this, but he's just the strikeouts that we were talking about earlier in the season combined with the hard hit rate. Yes, effective player who's elevating the ball, slugging more, and the hard hit has just taken a tumble. His strikeouts have gone even more up. For a guy who's aging, that definitely is not a good sign, an elevated strikeout rate. Right now, he has the biggest year-over-year change of anyone in the majors. I mean, that combined with a lower walk rate is just a complete red flag. And yes, he's had a few good games, but I'm really concerned about him in a way that I think people are getting mad online about people not being concerned about DJ, but Yankees Twitter right now is just people yelling at everyone else who they should be mad about. So taking that out of the equation, I feel like DJ definitely is the single biggest loss for this Yankees offense right now, because we know what a difference maker he can be at the top of the lineup. We know they're still looking for a leadoff guy. I think Rizzo coming around will happen, but DJ has been on a troubling trend all year. And looking at his Savant page, I mean, that's a lot of blue in some very bad areas. And the trend has only gotten worse. Like, at the beginning of the year, if you're going to slug, you can get away with a lot more strikeouts. But at this point, he's not hitting for sufficient power. And even if he was, you know, even if he was making contact, we would probably be seeing something like a 2021 DJ LeMahieu. And at this point, like, I don't even know. Yes, I think he can get back to there, but if that's your best case scenario, that's not a great look for this offense. And he's just so important. I think having him at the top of the lineup is what makes this offense, you know, having him get on base behind in front of Judge and Rizzo and Stanton, who will all be back in the lineup, will all be hitting, like, nothing. There's no major red flags besides injury with any of them. DJ just looks like a player who's in decline, and he was compensating with power, and now that's going away. Like, not great.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think we can pump the brakes a little bit on that. Like, since April 25th, DJ is a 58 WRC plus hitter. And that sucks. His 6.4% walk rate, not very good. You know, lower than anything he's posted over a full season as a Yankee. His 26.3% strikeout rate, not good. Higher than anything he's posted as a Yankee, especially when he's only getting a 117 ISO and, you know, 324 slug out of it. But his BABIP in that time is 257. His average exit velocity in that time is 89.8 miles an hour. Last year, his average exit velocity was 89.2 miles an hour, and his BABIP was 285. So I do think there ought to be some regression, but seeing it persist over this long a time is concerning. And if you look at the StatCast expected stats, expected batting average, career low, expected slug, career low, except for his rookie year in Chicago, or rather in Colorado. Not his rookie year, the first year of StatCast, which was 2015 in Colorado, and his expected weighted on base, career low. So there ought to be some regression if he keeps hitting the ball with the same profile that he's been hitting the ball. His hard hit rate per StatCast up year over year to almost a career high. His barrel rate up year over year to almost a career high. You know, does the 4.9 degree launch angle get you excited? No, but it's not out of the DJ LeMahieu norm. Does the 2.8 or 2.08 ground ball to fly ball get you excited? No, but it's not out of the career norm. The concern for me about why I might expect these struggles to persist with DJ is he's been, for the first time in his career, a negative in runs above value on, like, basically every pitch. So last year he was positive against four seamers, positive against cutters, positive against sinkers, positive against changeups, positive against sliders, positive against curveballs. He was only a negative against splitters. This year, positive against four seamers, and on a rate basis, like, by a lot more than he was last year. Against cutters, super negative. Against sinkers, super negative. Against changeups, negative. Against sliders, super negative. Against curveballs, super negative. So everything, every pitch that has a wrinkle in it, DJ LeMahieu cannot hit anymore. And it's funny because it's a very similar profile to what we're seeing with Anthony Volpe, where the only pitch he really does damage against is the four-seam fastball. Which, for a kid who played like five games in AAA and just got called up to the majors, makes sense that he'd be adjusting to breaking balls at the major league level. But with LeMahieu, it's super weird because he used to destroy these pitches that moved, whether it was cutters, whether it was sliders, whether it was curveballs, and now he's terrible against them. And I don't know what causes that. I don't know what
creates that. And, you know, if you look at his plate discipline profile, nothing screams out as to what is creating this strikeout rate, except that the contact rate is way down on both pitches outside of the zone, really primarily on pitches outside of the zone, which is funny because generally if you trade some contact on pitches outside of the zone and therefore more of the balls you hit are pitches in the zone, your contact gets better, which it kind of has, but it translates into results. The weird thing for me for DJ is like, his chase rate isn't different from last year. His zone swing rate is only a tiny bit up from last year. His swing rate overall is where it was in 2021 and lower than it was in 2019 or 2020. Again, less contact on pitches out of the zone should be good. Zone contact is still over 90%, basically where it was in 2015, not all that far off where it was in 2019. Contact rate overall is low, but everything bringing it down is chase. So, like, I really don't get it. Like, the swinging strike rate is up. We know that because he's making less contact. The called strike rate is where it was last year. So the called strike plus whiff is just a little bit higher than it was last year. Like, nothing screams out in his underlying stats aside from the fact that he is now hopeless against these pitches that move, and maybe that's what's driving up the lower out of zone contact rate. But like, when we consider that his contact is legitimately better, that the launch angle stuff is where it was last year, the ground ball to fly ball is where it was last year, like, I don't like what I see when I watch him play, but these numbers, which obviously don't tell the whole story, don't suggest to me that it ought to persist.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're right in that, like, it doesn't look noticeably different. I think that's the frustrating thing, because it's like the at-bats, like, there are more strikeouts, but they're not, like, it just seems like every at-bat is kind of ending up in the same way, which is like he's hitting the ball hard into the ground, is not doing anything, it's off-speed pitches. And it's frustrating because it's like that's even worse than if you know, like, what the clear issue is, if there's like a potential injury, and who knows, you know, maybe there is an injury we don't know about. But what we do know is since like mid-August of last year, DJ LeMahieu has roughly been about this type of hitter, and that was also what he was in 2021. Yeah, slightly better. But it's kind of agonizing that there was such a good non-2019 version of DJ LeMahieu, non-2020, who, like, for me, it's like, I know that the rocket, but like, everyone knows that the rocket ball stats were inflating people's numbers, but I just would want him to be something closer to that first half 2022, which was hitting for moderate power. And
but even DJ's numbers relative to league average in, like, everyone had, this is what I really dislike this about the rocket ball discourse. Everyone had the same ball. So even if you don't look at DJ's raw numbers in the rocket ball year 2019, but you look at his numbers relative to league average, he was really freaking good. And I agree with what you're about to say about 2022.
Yeah,
pre-injury.
But like, for right, 2022 pre-injury was honestly, in my opinion, the best DJ LeMahieu we've seen, even better than 2020. I think 2020 was fueled by a very short season and a lot of luck.
Yeah, 2020 DJ was a luck merchant. He wasn't barreling the ball. He was hitting it into the ground. He had a 370 BABIP, even though he's one of the slowest people who's ever existed. Like, 2020 DJ was a luck merchant.
I mean, he
good
took advantage
him.
Of it for, he got a great contract. But 2022 first half DJ LeMahieu had an OBP over 400, slugging over 400. I mean, that's like ideally in a post-Rocketball world, like where you would want DJ LeMahieu to be. Mm-hmm. And it sucks what happened at the end of last year, but it's just frustrating that he clearly can hit the ball hard. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that he has that capability, but he's just hitting it directly into the ground. Maybe that's the biggest issue and we're overthinking it, or we're looking for some other cause that he just, you know, maybe his performance is a little more variable because he's hitting the ball into the ground, because he has a tendency to do that. But even so, we've seen
the ground ball rate is the same as it was last year, the year before. It's only a little bit higher than 2019. Like,
right. We've seen him. We've seen him play well when that occurs. Like, we've seen it last year. Mm-hmm. So the tools are there for him to be that kind of player, but there are a lot of worrying trends, and I think the strikeout rate is the biggest red flag that hasn't existed before. So we'll see. I mean, if he's healthy, he's going to get a chance to play every day with this offense. So he, in my mind, he is the biggest difference maker, that kind of the biggest gap in performance. I know Rizzo's been playing poorly, but he still has very good numbers on the season. I think DJ LeMahieu, if he can really turn it around and get anything close to 2022 DJ LeMahieu first half, that would be a huge boost for this offense. And this offense doesn't have one quick fix, but that's like the single biggest gap in expected performance versus actual performance in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, like, I agree that over the course of the season, that's definitely the case. But, like, holy cow, Anthony Rizzo has been miserable for, you know, it's like the stats are jarring. He has a 9 WRC plus going back to May 21st. He has a 41 WRC plus going back to May 18th. He's a below league average hitter going back to, or he's exactly league average going back to April 29th, and he's below league average going back to April 21st. Like, this has been a long time of stuff I don't like from Anthony Rizzo. I wish he would walk more. Like, one of the weirdest things about the Yankees is Anthony Rizzo, who is historically like a, you know, mid-teen strikeout guy and high single digits to low double digits walk guy, being a 6% walk, 26% strikeout guy since late April. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. And then it adds up that he's a 94 WRC plus hitter in that span. But again, like, I don't think he is that guy. Like, I don't think there's something that's happened to Anthony Rizzo that's turned him into a 6% walk, 26% strikeout guy over his last 184 plate appearances, although it's alarming. I think it, like, it's a long season. Baseball's frustrating. There are some guys who aren't playing up to the standard they ought to be playing to. And when that changes, with or without Judge, the team is going to play better. So, and again, I think that so many people get into this mindset in which the analysis is the Yankees can't hit without Judge. The Yankees will never hit without Judge. The Yankees are bad if he's not there. Like, sometimes it's true that the Yankees don't hit without Judge, but unless you believe that Judge's presence in the lineup is so massive in its impact that Anthony Rizzo, Gleyber Torres, DJ LeMahieu, and Giancarlo Stanton are all 35% worse than league average at best without him there. Like, I simply can't believe that. Why did Anthony Rizzo hit well on bad teams in Chicago? Why did DJ LeMahieu hit well on bad teams in Colorado? Why did Giancarlo Stanton hit well previously on the Yankees at times when Aaron Judge was out, and also his entire time in Miami? Like, it doesn't make sense as an analytical framework.
Yeah, I agree. I think going to the walk thing is interesting because that might be the single biggest disappointment I have, because, like, we've had conversations about players, you know, players who are going to regress to the mean in good and bad ways, and hitting, there is some amount of variability with it, but the Yankees historically have been a team that works the count and does, you know, damage with lots of runners on base, but can work those big innings. And I think the single biggest thing I've been disappointed with by this year's team is just the lack of doing that. I mean, their on-base percentage being 301 and being pretty much in the bottom part of the league is just very, I hate to say there's a Yankees-like, because there's obviously there's like different iterations of the Yankees, and, you know, no team, there's no through line that connects teams over the years, but this team historically has been a team that always is in the top part of the league and on base percentage. And right now, I mean, Anthony Rizzo having the second best OBP on the team at 344, and maybe it's just the personnel that they have, but I think guys like DJ LeMahieu should have better than 300 on base percentage. I think Anthony Volpe having a 260 on base percentage is, that is a part of it. Like, you can hit well, you can not hit well, but they're just not taking the walks that we're accustomed to with this team. And I think that's honestly a big part of the failing of the offense right now, because opposing team pitchers are just breezing through in a way which we haven't seen in a while. And in terms of the pitches that they're actually taking, they're 25th in baseball in pitches per plate appearance. And that's just bad. I mean, that's not, it's really bad.
And they're 24th. They're 24th in walk
so
rate.
So what's your
month.
Thought on that?
Now, there's some good company at the bottom of that walk rate list. 24th Yankees, 25th Houston, 27th Orioles. So there is some good company there. But yeah, like, I mean, I think there are guys who are historically a lot more disciplined than they've been who are bad right now. And I don't know if that's a function of trying to, you know, hit their way out of slumps or something, especially because, like, when you look at, in addition to walk rate, one thing that has benefited the Yankees having a high walk rate in the past, or led to them having a high walk rate in the past, is they don't really chase a ton. Even this month, like, they chase less than the Rays and the Orioles and the Astros. So it's not like good offenses are just not swinging at pitches that the Yankees are swinging at. Like, they're pretty middle of the pack in chase rate, even over this period where they've been bad. We can't ignore, because, you know, it's Yankees files, we're going to talk BABIP. Their BABIP in June is fully 44 points lower than the next lowest team. It's 186, and that's not going to sustain. But in the absence of hits, it's nice to have walks. And the Yankees have not provided those this month. And I think DJ LeMahieu and Anthony Rizzo are a big part of that. And honestly, we talked last episode about how the message to Anthony Volpe should be, the only things we care about are walks and barrels. And frankly, I would give the same message to Anthony Rizzo and DJ LeMahieu. Like, I'm going to say a thing that people aren't going to like. Should I do it?
I think whatever I say is not going to impact you saying it. So
in the near term, let me make it very clear that I mean in the near term, I would rather DJ LeMahieu and Anthony Rizzo try to have 15% walk rates, 35% strikeout rates, and 500 slugging percentages than anything else. Like, the only thing I care about them doing is walking and barreling, which leads to slug. Like, Joey Gallo has a 321 on base and a 478 slug, and that's a 121 WRC plus. He has a 15% walk rate and a 38% strikeout rate almost. That's what I'd like DJ LeMahieu and Anthony Rizzo to try to do right now. Like, strike out as much as you want, but only swing at good pitches. Don't swing at anything out of the zone. Be really, really selective. If there's a pitch that you know you're going to crush, swing at it. Otherwise, leave the bat in your shoulder. And, like, I think that's what Anthony Rizzo should be doing. I think it's what Anthony Volpe should be doing. I think it's what DJ LeMahieu should be doing. And, like, it's glaring how this team has not gotten on base and has not slugged this month. And walks are a great way to get on base, and hitting homers is a great way to up your slug. And that's what I would advise everyone to do.
Yeah, for DJ, I mean, we talk about 2022 first half, but go back to April, DJ.
April, yeah.
Right? So he's striking out 28 times in 88 at-bats, but he's also slugging 443. Like, that's, we're not asking for miracles here. Maybe April 2022 DJ LeMahieu is unattainable, but that April DJ LeMahieu is kind of the player you described. And I think, I don't know, we're not Dylan Lawson, so we don't have impact, unlike Dylan Lawson. But I think that's, like, a helpful thing. Like, if I was a hitting coach, I think, like, just simply, like, kind of simplifying what you're thinking about to try to help you get out of slumps. And maybe that's not the approach. Maybe that's not the right way to do it. But I feel like, in terms of what we'd want for the guys, like, that makes sense to me. And they've shown that it can be an avenue for success. Like, I don't see, especially for a young player like Volpe, who really looks like he's pressing, like, we've seen Volpe be effective when using that strategy as well. I mean, there have been.
Why did Volpe stay afloat at the beginning of the season when he wasn't hitting?
Yeah.
It was because he was walking a ton. And then we saw him start to hit for power. And then we saw, you know, everything fall off. But, like, rediscovering the walk rate thing. And, you know, I was doing some research earlier because someone said that Marcus Thames and Dylan Lawson have been terrible. The Yankees are second in walk rate going back to 2016. Second in baseball. Just rediscover that. It's like, this is one of the things where the roster is a lot of the same guys. Yeah, so it should retain those characteristics. Take pitches. Like, only swing at pitches you can drive and take the rest of them. And, like, everything will be fine. But, like, the Jose Trevino at bat from last night, infuriating. And I think that at bat in which the directive was, we really need a ball in play, led to him chasing a bunch of pitches. Like, he didn't swing at a single pitch in the zone against Chris Martin in that at bat. And I understand that situationally, it would still call for a ball in play, regardless of what the overarching philosophy that he's going to the plate with is. But, and I don't think this is a coaching thing, that Jose Trevino was doing that. But I do think that, like, Jose Trevino and IKF, both of whom came from Texas, are, like, the least disciplined hitters we've ever seen. And the Yankees historically have done a really good job teaching plate discipline and bringing discipline to the game. And it's been a very weird thing to see them not having in the last, you know, couple weeks. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, one thing that I'm trying to be conscious of is how I cannot be like the people that I was criticizing at the beginning of the podcast. And I think the difference is, we are not suggesting that the Yankees do anything except for what they've done since 2017, a period over which their offense has been really good.
Right.
We're suggesting that they walk a lot, which they historically have. We're suggesting that they slug, which they historically have. And we're suggesting that they don't really worry about striking out as long as they're getting walk and slug. And that has been the philosophy that those teams have brought to the games. It's been a big part of the reason why they've been good. Doing anything other than that seems both not to optimize the skills of the players on this team and to be a much less productive strategy. So I am not asking for the Yankees to change anything about the way they have approached offense. I am asking them to get back to it. And that is the way that this is different from the people who are saying everyone's being insufficiently coached. They're not being told the right stuff. They're not being taught how to produce. Like, no, it's not that. It's that the Yankees know how to create runs and are doing a bad job of creating runs in that way right now. And yeah, if they can get back to it, they will be good.
100%. Like, I think there aren't guys right now. Like, the thing about Aaron Hicks, despite all of his shortcomings, was that if he wasn't hitting, he was walking. And, like, the walks carried him and elevated his performance. And first half Aaron Hicks, and first half 2022 Aaron Hicks, was a player who was league average offensively because he walked a lot. And we've seen players like that for the Yankees. Like, it is, like you said, the strategy that they should be entailing, the strategy that guys on this team have successfully entailed. And it's not like this is a whole new offense. In fact, it is far from it. It's if they brought in 9 new hitters this year, I would understand people's frustration. But this is a team that has shown success by doing certain things and is very capable of doing those things. And Aaron Judge is just one guy who takes 4 plate appearances a game. Yes, 4 very important plate appearances that help a lot, but there's no reason. Like, he's not coaching the guys. He's not telling them what to do in their at-bats. There's 8 other guys every day who have to hit and make those swing decisions. And I agree with you. I think that should be the message. And that also doesn't preclude offensive additions, but it doesn't mean that the guys on this team, like it or not, are going to be the core of the offense in October. Like, I don't know what percentage, but maybe like 80% of the players we see right now will be taking October at bats, and they're going to be the ones who have to bring the championship. Like, it's not going to be a completely new offense at the trade deadline. So yeah, I think there are reasons for concern, but those reasons need to be addressed mostly by the players on the field, and making additions or subtractions is only going to help slightly. I mean, the Yankees have hit so much worse since they got rid of Aaron Hicks. So you're telling me that was the issue?
Yeah, that
and
it
they
was
fixed
getting
it
rid of Aaron Hicks. Yeah.
Right.
So I would like to make a plea. This is my plea to the Yankees, because I don't like to pathologize, you know, on behalf of people who I don't know, and I don't like to speculate about things that I have no way of knowing, and you know, I've criticized people pretty significantly for doing those things. But what I will say is, and this is my plea to the Yankees, and we know you're all listening, each individual hitter on the Yankees, if it is the case that you are pressing, or you are changing something about your approach, or you are trying to do more than is required of you or expected of you to make up for the absence of Aaron Judge, stop. You're good enough. As long as you play to your true talent level, you are good enough. This is a star-studded team with or without Aaron Judge. This is a team that is going to prevent runs effectively enough to win a lot of games with or without Aaron Judge. This is a team that is running out very good players at a number of positions and is about to add another in Harrison Bader potentially sometime this week without Aaron Judge. All they need to do is stay afloat while Judge is out and not go on a major slide. They could really make up some ground while Judge is out, because they're good enough on their own. But my plea to everyone on the Yankees is, if you're trying to do more than what you would typically do to make up for Judge being gone, don't. Do exactly the things that you are capable of in exactly the ways that you know how to do them, and things will be fine.
That was very positive. I think you have a career as like a self-help coach. Maybe they need you in the coaching box.
Well, I don't believe that about everyone. Like I don't believe that about everyone, to be fair. Yeah, like I would not tell Andrew Benintendi to keep doing what he's doing.
Like,
I would not tell,
you're doing well, except for you, Andrew Benintendi. You specifically cannot improve.
Exactly. Like I would not tell Jose Abreu that he should keep doing what he's doing, for example. But for a lot of these guys, as long as they get back to the things that have made them successful as Yankees, they're going to be fine. Like, Giancarlo Stanton is not the hitter he's been since he came back. DJ LeMahieu is not the hitter he's been for the last few months. Anthony Rizzo is not the hitter he's been for the last 6 weeks. Gleyber Torres isn't the hitter he's been for the last 2 weeks. It's not the case. And those guys are going to be fine. But changing a bunch of stuff, if anyone is feeling like that's what they should do to try to compensate for the absence of Aaron Judge, is only going to make things worse, and they shouldn't do that. So that's my plea to the Yankees. Do what you know you are capable of doing.
We're a week removed, or a week and a half removed, from thinking this offense was really good. And
well, it is.
Right. Well, slumps happen, and sometimes they happen at the same time, and sometimes they happen at the same time without your best player. And obviously, mm-hmm. it's going to look really bad when all of those things happen. And I think, yeah, I agree. I think there are, again, I maintain my position that I'm still frustrated that this team has less room to withstand these things on the margins, because there are guys who play and probably shouldn't be playing. But I'm less frustrated because I think some of those guys are gone, that some of those guys have reduced playing time. I'm much more happy with this group to try to ride it out and to be confident in them figuring it out than sitting and hoping that IKF, Hicks, and Donaldson playing every single day are going to suddenly become hitters that they've never been. I think you said that's the biggest difference. Like, past performance is the best indicator of future performance. So there's varying levels of concern for sure. We talked about DJ versus Gleyber and Stanton and Rizzo, and, you know, all of those guys I think have different levels you should be concerned about them. But if, you know, you wake up in 2 weeks and the offense is humming along, it's not because they all suddenly figured out how to hit like they had never hit before. I think they probably would be doing a lot of what your plea for them requested of them. And I think that's all there is to it. I think that I would like to have the catching conversation on another day, because I think that's starting to get a little interesting and my position on it might starting to be changed. But right now, Jose Trevino's the catcher, Anthony Volpe's the shortstop, and the rest of the guys playing are fully capable. We've seen them be all-star hitters.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Whipple, let's start to wrap things up here. The Yankees are without Harrison Bader. They are without Aaron Judge. They are without Nestor Cortez. They are without Ian Hamilton. They are without Carlos Rodon. They are without Jonathan Loaisiga. What is your confidence in them out of 10?
Without all of those things, they're still 38-29, and that's still a really good record. They're still a lot of time to make up ground. They're still in playoff position. And again, I'll come back to what I said at the beginning. I think this pitching staff, which rightly so, we did not talk about them. Like, I feel like they have earned the right not to be talked about.
They're good.
Incredibly, incredibly happy with the way this pitching has progressed over the year with, again, it's not like they have a full complement of guys. I think 2022.
Shout out Domingo Herman. Shout out Clark Schmidt.
Yeah. Like 2022 kind of had everybody healthy in that pitching rotation at the same time. Very rare. This team has not had that, and they've still been really good at pitching. And offense, definitely reasons to be concerned. Definitely disappointments. I don't think I can maintain my confidence because I think there are major red flags, but those red flags can change to green flags. I think there's nothing that's precluding that from happening. I'm going to go down to an 8.5 because they easily could have won most of those games last week because of the pitching, and it doesn't take much improvement on
and
offense.
Should have.
Yeah, to come around. So you can't, in my mind, you can't stay at the same level because the offense is concerning. My confidence in them is shaky and, you know, will remain so. But that's just kind of like just a slight penalty for the games that are played. And I think for it to go back up, we need to start seeing some of what you're talking about. We need proof of the guys who are not Aaron Judge to be able to step up, carry this team. They're fully capable of it, but we need to see that. So I'm going to go to an 8.5.
Yeah, I'm going to go to an 8 just because I think at this point in the season, I need to start holding this team's lack of health against this team. And, you know, as confident as I am in this team when it is healthy, like not having your two guys who are going to give you the most war from position players, which is Aaron Judge and Harrison Bader, is something that you can't realistically live without for all that long. Like, if this team were the fully healthy Yankees team, I would not be as confident in them as I am. And it's good that they're going to get these guys back and we should be excited about it. But I am going to bank on it a little bit less and give them the confidence boost when they are back, and as opposed to maintaining my confidence because they will be back. So I'm going to go down to an 8. I still think this team is very good. They are still in a playoff spot. They are still ahead of the defending World Series champions. They're only 4 games behind the Orioles, despite the fact that everything has gone wrong for the Yankees and everything has gone right for the Orioles. They should have won 2 more games this week. I mean, like, look, the bottom line is, as much as we talked about the offense this podcast, the Yankees handed 2 games to Mike King with the lead this week and lost both of them. That isn't going to happen very often. It's just not. So that was the difference between a 2-4 week and a 4-2 week. So, you know, I'm not going to freak out too much about the specifics of, like, I'm not going to freak out too much about the offense, as we've discussed. I'm not going to freak out about the pitching because I don't think it's normal for Mike King to do that. But I feel like I need to start grading this team a little bit more like the way I would if we weren't getting Aaron Judge and Carlos Rodon and Harrison Bader all back in, and Ian Hamilton all back in, you know, relatively short order if, you know, all the reports are to be believed and everything continues to go well. So I'm going to go to an 8. Obligatory note that Gary Sanchez has a 155 WRC plus as a member of the San Diego Padres and a 132 WRC plus on the season. Just wanted to get that out there. It's a hot Gary summer in San Diego. Any of you who told me that I was an idiot for continuing to believe he was good, you guys are all wrong. His peripherals are good. Honestly, if we see some positive BABIP regression, it wouldn't be the most surprising thing, but like, he is slow, so I'm not going to bank on it. Gary Sanchez is a good player. He's been very good defensively, like very good for basically the first time in his career. On a rate basis, he's doing incredibly. I think that I'm basically owed an apology from much of the baseball world. So just wanted to get that in there. Congratulations to Gary for how well he has played since joining the Padres.
Is that... Can I give my parting shot, or do you want me to talk about Gary?
Yeah, you can give your parting shot. I gave up
my parting shot last week for Gary. So this week, yeah. I'm not giving it up because I wanted to ask you, do you want to take a trip to Dunedin to see a Florida Complex League game? Because I heard it's really fun to watch the developing Blue Jays prospect. I went to Dunedin 2022. I had a great experience. It was a really nice place. But you know what I didn't get to see when I was down there for spring training in 2022?
A pitcher who weighs a lot.
A pitcher who weighs a lot. A pitcher who unfortunately shares my name, although with a K, so I'm going to disown him. And I just encourage you, if you live in the Florida, you know, Dunedin area, just go and support the local Florida Complex League Blue Jays, because the times are tough for Alek Manoah. I think he really could use all of your support. I know it's probably the most stressful environment he's been in all year, so... Just, you know, I'm usually, you know, we usually like to have fun and banter, but let's lift up Alek Manoah. You know, we'll take the McDonald's app away from him and help him really just rediscover that all-star form.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know how much we all love Guillermo Villasmil and Anders Tolhurst and Gage Stanifer and Brody Rodnig and Al Pesto. They have a guy named Al Pesto.
It's like a create your own player in the show.
Al Pesto, watch your back because Alek Manoah might eat you. And look, I personally am a huge fan of Giorgeni Casimiri, so I was going to be at the Florida Complex League games anyway. But now that Alek Manoah is down there, we know he particularly needs our support in these trying times so he can go back and be in the Blue Jays movie. So you know, let's all try to give him any support.
I'll close with this great quote from Mike Axsessa, because it really sums up, I think, how we all feel. Is the diplomatic thing to say is, I'd rather the Yankees beat Manoah and the Blue Jays with him at his best, but I don't really feel that way. And you know what? That's same. Couldn't have happened to a worse person.
Yeah. Look, and I'm sure that Jerry Huntsinger and
Kendry
Chirinos and Yoangel Aponte and Yeuni Munoz are really happy to be able to learn from Alek Pressures for Tires Manoah. All right, Whipple, let's wrap this thing up. People can find us on YankeesFiles.com. They can keep up with us on Twitter, where we're at Yankees Files. We're at Yankees Files Podcast on TikTok, and the podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts. We hope that if you like it, you will rate, review, and subscribe. We hope that if you don't like it, you'll just subscribe and listen to it 10 times in a row on silent to boost our numbers. We're going to do this again next week, potentially with an exciting guest. And the Yankees are going to play some games against the Mets and then some games in Boston that hopefully Whipple won't attend so the Yankees can actually win them. And we'll do this same time, same place next week. Until then, let's go Yankees.